Hello and welcome to the Houston Vineyard Podcast. We sincerely hope that this message is a blessing to you. Enjoy.
Good morning, everyone. So I was preparing this morning and this week, but this morning I talked to our oldest, Winona, and she told me, ask everyone, how was breakfast? How was breakfast? Hope you had a good breakfast. It's great to be here today. As Chris mentioned, and as some of you might know already, my name is Shaq. I'm not from here. I am from the Kingdom of the Netherlands in Europe. And I say that, and maybe we can show the first slide, for three reasons. One, not everyone might know that it's a kingdom, which I think is important, right? We have a queen, we have a king, and that's extra important because we just lost kind of the royal Brits, the Raggett family, but you still have the royal Dutch in your midst. Two, I say it's from the Kingdom of the Netherlands in Europe, right? Also known as Holland. And I say that because, and you might advance to the next slide, there's also a part of the Netherlands in the Caribbean, off the coast of Venezuela. Great place to visit, I've been told. We haven't been there yet. And three, Holland, not Holland, Pennsylvania. So, before I continue, I had prepared a prayer, which I'm going to not do, because I'm going to use something. My dad sent me some encouragement this morning, and he referred to the story of David, where he was dancing in front of the ark, and forgot that it's not about him, that it's not about us, but it's about God. So I pray, dear God, for a posture of obedience and trust, that we got our eyes on you, on your word. May you open our heart for your word. Amen. So there's a lot to talk about today. There's three things. The Summer of Wonder is kind of where we're in. Beauty for Ashes and my special assignment, the Year of the Jubilee, that I got assigned after getting together with the team, prepare for the summer series. So let me start with the Summer of Wonder. So I love the summer. I love the sun. I always have. So growing up in the Netherlands, you have the four seasons normally. So winter is a lot of fun, especially if there's snow and ice. The fall, spring is okay, kind of working towards the summer. But for me, the summer is it. So we used to go camping with the family, you know, Germany, Luxembourg, France, a couple of weeks. And when we were home, and maybe you can show what home looks like on the screen, it's at the beach. So we spend our summers on the beach, it feels like, hanging out with friends, swimming, playing, soccer, food, in the morning, evening, everything happened on the beach. It seems like now. I should also point out, maybe just a historical fact, that what you see here, Westkapelle is what it's called, on the island of Walcheren, was very important during World War II. It's located kind of on the river that leads to Antwerp, which was an important battleground at some point because the Allied forces had invaded in France but couldn't advance quickly enough into the heart of Germany. The Germans held on to the port of Antwerp, and in order to break through all of that, there was a huge battle which ended up being all about this little island, okay? The Battle of the Scheldt, as they call it. I have a book about it. I haven't fully read it yet. But in order to beat the Germans, there was heavy fighting in October of 1944, ending up in a decision, October 3, to have the dike inundated. Operation Inundate, as they called it, infatuate. October 3, 240 heavy bombers started bombing the dike. You see the water behind it, flooding the entire island. They bombed two other places. Germans were pushed to the high ground, but the Allied forces were able to land, were able to fight the Germans off, take the stronghold, open the gateway to the Scheldt, and the rest is history. So 180 civilians were killed around that battle, from the village where I'm from, West Capella. So it's something we grew up with, right? Avi's parents, grandparents were alive back then. My grandparents were alive back then. But I grew up, you know, playing. You know, see it there, kind of. It's still part of the defense network. But we were just playing, right? We were just playing, having fun. And again, to me, summer is wondrous. Some magical, nostalgic feeling probably about it. So spiritually, I think I'm in the summer too. But I've also been in the spring for quite some time. Probably since my teenage years till late 20s when I met Avi. I grew up, was raised Christian. My parents, great Christians, great example as to how you live your life as a Christian on a day-to-day basis. But I didn't do all too much with it. But I knew that God was there, right? I knew His sun was shining. But I might have been just indifferent, focused on other things. Living in the spring. It's chilly at times in the spring. It rained sometimes. But then, met Avi. She was church-going. And I started going to church again too. And I feel like since then, the sun has been shining stronger and brighter. So, as we moved to Houston at some point, we found a great church. It's a couple of blocks down the street. You should go there. Yeah. Just kidding. The Vineyard. We became a member. Started helping out. Found a small group. Helped out in the kids' department. Michael Palandro recommended me to do the Vineyard Institute, which I did. So just continue to wrestle, read the Bible, grow. And where I'm now, as Chris mentioned, I'm doing that master's at Biola University Apologetics, and that's been great. It's been a blessing. I'm learning a lot. It's inspiring me a lot, and I think it's important. Okay, so as we read in 1 Peter 3:15, someone can put it on the screen, or I can just read it here. Always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. And as part of that program, I continue to wonder. The more I read and hear, the more I study, the more I think, the more I continue to be convinced that Christianity seems to make, or not seems, does make most sense of the experiences in our world. And I'm thinking those are the questions that we all think about. Where do we come from? Where are we going to? Why are we here? And it makes me wonder. Some people might be completely oblivious, but most people I know are not. Some people think that the answer lies maybe scientism, agnosticism, atheism, a lot of isms out there. For me, theism gives the best explanation for reality as we see it. So I'd like to quote an author here, Lee Strobel, also an apologetic. Essentially, he said, I realized that to stay an atheist, I would have to believe that nothing produces everything, that non-life produces life. Randomness produces fine-tuning. Chaos produces information. Unconsciousness produces consciousness, and non-reason produces reason. Those leaps of faith, he said, were simply too big for me to take, especially in light of the affirmative case of God's existence and Jesus' resurrection, and thus his divinity. I couldn't have said it better, but clearly, to me, there's a lot to wonder about. Okay, and I hope that I will be able to continue to have more, better conversations about it with other people that wonder. With gentleness and respect, right? Which goes both ways. If we just assume that someone else that might not be a Christian is backwards or unintelligent, we're not going to go any very far, right? So I think we need to realize that everyone has a belief system, whatever it might be. So, my hope is that I'll be able to continue into my summer of wonder. I think I need it. I need to grow more. Fall might be coming. Winter might be coming. So I need to grow strong while I'm in the summer. Maybe fall and winter never come, but they probably will. Albeit, you know, might be an Indian summer, might be a never-ending summer. We're in Houston after all. So who knows? So with that said, I want to kind of go back to what Pastor Josh said a couple of weeks ago, 2 weeks ago, about the fact that we're living in uncertain times. He mentioned COVID-19. We're still dealing with the aftermath. It was uncharted, maybe hostile territory for a lot of us. But it's not just COVID-19. There's broader trends to point to. Seemingly increased global instability. After maybe decades of relative peace on the global stage, think about the war in Ukraine. My mom told me a couple of months ago, they were at a birthday party where people were talking about bomb shelters in the Netherlands. It's a luxury that we didn't have to talk about that for a long time, but I've never experienced that in my life. Also, I don't think that you should be talking about bomb shelters on a birthday party, but that's a different topic. Uncertainty about globalization, digitalization, where's that going to? Lack of trust in authority, politicians, each other. I mean, it doesn't seem like we can have a normal conversation with each other anymore. Everything is polarized. We have forgotten, it seems like, that you can have arguments and disagree with someone without burning the person to the ground, without canceling that person. You're canceled, because I don't like what you're saying there. Concerns about the state of our society, broken families, crime, increasing gap between poor and rich. The list goes on, climate. So what I want to do today is give a list of 10 points that you can take back home, implement, and it will all be fixed. But, and we'll regroup next year. No, we need to go back to the Bible. The big story of the Bible, which I want to do in 3 different steps, as said, the assignment I got was the year of the Jubilee. So the first step I want to take ends up in Leviticus, the second one in Isaiah, third in Luke. All right, the historical year of the Jubilee, the prophetic year of the Jubilee, and the partial fulfillment of the Jubilee. All right, let's start in Leviticus. 25:8. Count off 7 Sabbath days, 7 times 7 years, so that the 7 Sabbath years amount to a period of 49 years. Then have the trumpet sounded everywhere on the 10th day of the 7th month. On the Day of Atonement, sound the trumpet throughout your land. Consecrate the 50th year and proclaim liberty throughout the land to all its inhabitants. It shall be a jubilee for you. Each of you is to return to your family property and to own your clan. The 50th year shall be a jubilee for you. Do not sow and do not reap what grows of it itself, or harvest the unintended vines. For it's a jubilee, and it's to be holy for you. Eat only what is taken directly from the fields. In this year of the jubilee, everyone is to return to their own property. So there's a lot to unpack here, and I can only do 5 things. First, I think it clearly shows that there's a different way to go about things, a better way to go about things. God does not want for things to just run their course, because it will inevitably end up in a mess. We're enslaving each other, indebting each other, taking each other's property. No, I think what follows from this is that there's a higher standard that we should aim for. But the question there is then, where do we get that higher standard from? Without God, it's hard to see how we could come to such a higher standard. And I like to quote C.S. Lewis here, who had said once, "My argument against God was that the universe seemed so cruel and unjust. But how had I got this idea of just and unjust? A man does not call a line crooked unless he has an idea of what a straight line looks like. What was I comparing this universe with when I called it unjust? Secondly, I think it already shows that back then, God's people were supposed to be different. Josh made comments about that too. Just as Christians are today. Foreigners, if you will, living in a different culture, living outside of culture. Believers are not to tolerate a life of slavery as it was practiced by other people back then. As a matter of fact, slavery has been around in every nation and every time, basically. Family, debt, poverty, that should not follow and burden a family for generations to come. No, God's society is supposed to be different. A little sidestep here, as I think it landed on my doorstep, our doorstep for a reason. Yesterday, I had ordered this book a couple of weeks ago, and Avi was like, oh, there's another book again. Which is fair, because I like books, and I order a lot of books. So this is called 100 Bible Verses That Made America. So I was looking last night, just reading a little bit, and I found one, which is about Leviticus 25:10. It happens to be that when William Penn found Pennsylvania, well, there you have Pennsylvania again for one reason, he hung a bell, and as the town grew over time, a louder bell was needed. So they ordered like a big, ginormous bell. The inscription came from Leviticus 25:10, proclaim liberty throughout the land to all the inhabitants thereof. So it says, this bell rang at every major step along the road to the Revolutionary War. Its most famous moment came at 11 a.m. on July 8, 1776, which you are supposed to know better than I am. The people were summoned to the Independence Hall to hear the reading of the Declaration of Independence. Well, that's interesting, but more interesting, I think, is that, you know, the abolitionists campaigning for the emancipation of slaves noticed the words too, and they began using the symbol of the old state bell in their pamphlets and posters, and they are the ones who gave it a new name, the Liberty Bell. So clearly, you know, just two centuries ago, still a testament to what the society is to look like, or what we can learn from Leviticus 25:10. So back to what I had prepared. It also shows the importance of the family as a fabric of society, as a cornerstone of society, because family debt was as much a reality back then as it is now, with all its devastating consequences. The cycle of poverty, generation to generation, with all the social problems that come with it. And what the Jubilee sought to do is to intervene. Future generations should not bear the burden of what their ancestors did. They should get a new start. So family, cornerstone of society, still real and actual. So fourth, it shows that God did not only give the land to the Israelites back then. No, it also showed that he governed time, nature. So by observing the Sabbath day, the Sabbath year, the year of the Jubilee, the people showed obedience and trust. God was going to provide. Not the humans themselves. He will provide. So fifth, and I find it interesting as an economist by background, there's also a critique that one author, Christian Christopher Wright, pointed to. So he says, what we can learn from this, God had given the land to the Israelites, and the Jubilee shows that it's not just about redistribution, but about restoration. So what we can learn from that is, and I'm quoting here, the Jubilee does stand as a critique, right? Not only of massive private accumulation of land and wealth, but also of large-scale forms of collectivism or nationalization that destroy any meaningful sense of personal or family property. And I find it interesting these days, because you're hearing about things like the Great Reset, which seems to be about less private property. What we're reading here, no, the family should be able to provide for themselves. Restoration, not retribution. So I think we should engage in these type of conversations through the lens of the Jubilee. So, five important things. But no matter how great the historical year of the Jubilee was, it doesn't solve everything, does it? Yes, it does provide restoration and relief. But if you compare it to maybe the current bankruptcy laws, which they basically were back then, if you go to bankruptcy, which is hard and painful, yes, you come out with a clean slate, ostensibly. But is it really full restoration? How do you feel compared to your neighbors, your former creditors? Are you really fully whole again? No, I don't think so, right? We're still left with ashes in our hands. So that's where the prophetic year of the Jubilee comes in, as we can find in Isaiah. So before we go into the scripture again, I kind of want to look at where we are in Isaiah. It's a different time than in Leviticus, clearly. We've moved on. At the beginning of Isaiah's ministry, the 10 northern tribes of Israel had been taken captive by Syria. At the end, towards the end of his ministry, 687 BC, Judah, the southern kingdom, was taken captive in Babylon. So I think, scary and uncertain times for sure. Yes, we are living in uncertain times, but so did they back then. Also, and you know that, but also, Isaiah was written way before Jesus Christ came, right? 700 years before. And that's why Isaiah generally is regarded to be the fullest revelation of Christ in the Old Testament, and some people call it the Gospel according to Isaiah. There's numerous passages that we can find that point to Jesus and have been fulfilled in him 700 years later. So that is a clear argument for the divine inspiration of the book itself, but also the Bible as a whole. And there you see, there I see, kind of a ray of sunshine of wonder again, like the historicity of the Bible, which, yeah, I was reading about a couple of months ago, and if you can put up the quote. Scores of archaeological findings have been made which confirm in clear outline or exact detail historical statements in the Bible. And by the same token, proper evaluation of biblical description has often led to amazing discoveries. It's been a while that he said that. He has since passed. But I think it's still true, and we should not forget about that. So back to the Bible, back to Isaiah. I found a beautiful quote from Ray Stedman, a pastor, that I like to listen to. Woven beautifully throughout this book is the never-ending revelation of God's love, of Jehovah's salvation, found in the figure of someone who is to come, the Messiah, the servant of God. At first, it is dim, shadowy, but gradually it grows brighter and still brighter until, in chapter 53, the figure of Christ steps right off the page and fills the whole room, and you realize that he is the answer. He is the answer. Well, the answer to what? Well, everything, really. All of our issues, all of our troubles, all our worries, all our sorrows, everything that we see to be broken around us, the answer is to be found there. Isaiah steps in where Leviticus leaves off. So let's go to Isaiah 61 real quick. So we read there, "The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn and provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. They will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor." Well, clearly someone important is being announced. The Spirit of the Lord is on me. The Lord anointed me. He sent me. That's quite a business card. So what does he come to do? Well, he comes to announce the year of the Lord's favor. Now that is clearly inspired, right, by the historical year of the Jubilee, but it's more, it's much more than that. That's the beauty of it. It's nothing less than the announcement of the gospel, nothing less than the announcement of Jesus. It's Jesus that we're talking about here. So yeah, in line, you could say in line with the historical year of the Jubilee, there's hope, there's restoration, but at a much higher level. Right, so four things we can find. The poor shall have the gospel preached to them. And we're not just talking about the poor in monetary terms. And we're talking about the poor in spirit, for the most part, us. The brokenhearted shall find their brokenness healed. So God's grace is coming to heal the broken hearts. We don't have to carry the burden, our burdens ourselves. And the captives will be brought back. The prisoners will be set free. Well, that clearly echoes the historical year of the Jubilee too. Slavery, right? Babylon, Assyria. But again, it's not just about physical captivity. It's about spiritual captivity. It goes back right to Adam and Eve in the beginning. They had all the freedom in the world. Sinned. And since then, we have been living enslaved to sin, which can come in a whole variety of ways. It could be money, power, status, work, sports. That's what we're talking about here. And the prisoners will be set free. So the acceptable year of the Lord. So the question is then, how can we be accepted? Well, we know the answer. Only through the sacrifice made by Jesus. Someone had to pay the price to make us right with God, to pay for our sins. Now we are acceptable. Come to Christ in faith, put your trust in Him, and He will accept us. He will receive us. So that's the acceptable year of the Lord, which is great news. We also see the day of the vengeance, the day of vengeance. That's going to be a certain moment in time. The year is a prolonged period of time. The day of the vengeance is a moment in time, and everyone needs to decide where he or she will be at that moment. Right? Because if you think about it, if there's a God in eternity, you're either going to be with him or without him. There's only two options. And that decision is up to everyone. Right? Each of us. There's no forcing one way or the other. You can make up your mind yourself. If you choose to be with him in eternity,